Real estate is really the final frontier where the average person has a legitimate shot at creating real wealth. Most people just don't make enough to save enough for the magic to really ever happen. The second part is they typically don't start early enough. Rather than compounding interest, I recommend compounding assets, income producing assets specifically. You can get there in 10 times faster to that retirement goal.
Heroes are an inspiring group of people. Every one of them, from the larger than life comic book heroes you see on the big silver screen, to everyday heroes that let us live the privileged lives we do. Every hero has a story to tell. From the doctor saving lives at your local hospital, to the war veteran down the street who risked his life for our freedom, to the police officers and the firefighters who risk their safety to ensure ours. Every hero is special and every story worth telling. But there is one class of heroes that I think is often ignored. The entrepreneur, the creator, the producer. The ones who look at the problems in this world and think to themselves, you know what? I can fix that. I can help people. I can make a difference. And they go out and do exactly that by creating a new product or introducing a new service. Some go on to change the world. Others make a world of difference to their customers. Welcome to the Hero Show. Join us as we pull back the masks on the world's finest heropreneurs and learn the secrets to their powers, their success, and their influence, so you can use those secrets to attract more sales, make more money, and experience more freedom in your business. I'm your host, Richard Matthews, and we are on in 3, 2, 1.
Hello and welcome back to The Hero Show. My name is Richard Matthews, and today I have the pleasure of having Matt Thorald on the line. Matt, are you there?
I am, Richard.
Awesome. Glad to have you here. For those of you who are following our podcast along regularly, you probably notice I'm in a new studio. We're visiting friends over in Tampa area for the holidays. And so we're in Florida enjoying the warm weather. Where are you calling in from, Matt?
I'm in Las Vegas right now. And it's nice outside.
Las Vegas. Yeah, wintertime in Vegas is the best time to be there. You get the nice weather. And it's nice to go for walks out there. I like Vegas this time of year.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. The fall and the spring, but the fall's a little extra special. Yep.
Yeah, it's really nice. You get if you got a chance to go up to, I'm going to forget the name, the mountain that's right over there, Mount Charles. This time of year.
Oh, Charles. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really pretty.
Yeah, it is pretty up there for sure.
Yeah. So what I always like to do at the beginning of these interviews for our audience who may or may not know who you are is just go through a brief bio and then we'll dive into your story. So first off, Matt is the CEO of Epic Real Estate and a Desert Storm veteran. Since 2003, he's built a thriving real estate portfolio using creative strategies without his own money or credit. Known for simplifying complex concepts, Matt's helped countless people achieve financial freedom through cash flow strategies. He's also the author of Escape, Crushing Conventional Wisdom with Real Estate Investing, Empowering Readers to Transform Their Financial Futures. When not teaching, Matt enjoys golfing with his son and relaxing with his family in Las Vegas. So today we're going to join Matt as he shares proven methods to break free from traditional financial wisdom. So what I always like to do, Matt, at the beginning of these is start off with who you are now, right? So what's your business and who do you serve? What do you do for them?
Sure. Well, our business is kind of twofold. We show people how to invest in real estate so they can either supplement their retirement or supplement their income or totally replace their income and put them in a position so they can retire early. That is the primary thing that we do. But my wife, she handles the side of the business where those that don't have the time or don't have really the desire to do all that heavy lifting, she'll just flat out do it for them. So we have a done-with-you service and a done-for-you.
So a done-for-you service actually helps someone do the investing on their behalf.
Correct. Basically, the customer calls the shots and we do all the work.
That's pretty amazing. I didn't know you could do something like that with real estate investing. Talk a little bit more about that. Does that mean you can, like, say it was me, for instance, you know, we could take the revenue from our company and just be like, hey, can you guys can just take that and like run the investing strategies?
Sort of. It's not like a fund or a REIT or anything like that. You would actually be the owner of real estate. So we'll go out and we'll find the property for you. We'll fix it up. We'll put a tenant in place. We'll coordinate the property management. We'll coordinate the financing. We'll take care of the whole transaction. Just hand it to our customers on a silver platter as a cash flowing asset.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Like, that's insanely cool. So how does that differ from like teaching and having them do it themselves? Like, can you talk a little bit about like the differences and like why you might choose one versus the other?
I think one is a little bit more where someone might be happy with what they're doing for a living, or they've got a good income and they've got other things that are important to them. So they'll delegate that to us to do for them. And then there's another portion where people are looking for something new to do. We have a lot of people that have been at their job for 10 or so years and kind of feel like they might have made a mistake. And now they want to go do something different, be a little bit more in control of their own financial future and be their own boss. So those are kind of the two prototypes, I guess. Not prototypes, what's the word I'm looking for? Avatar. It's a very technical term. But those are like the two types of people that come to us for help. And I guess there would be one more, like those that get up there like 50, 55 years old and realize they're not quite on track to hit their retirement and they need to speed things up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. We call that the four quarters of money, right? So, you know, first quarter is 20 to 30 and then 30 to 40, 40 to 50, and then 50 to 60 is fourth quarter. And you're like, you got to win the game of money before the end of the fourth quarter.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything up to 20 is pregame. You know, you want to have it in place by the time you get to the get to fourth quarter.
Sure.
Which is funny for me because like I'm coming up on third quarter here shortly, so we're going to get things in line. So I guess my next question for you on that is, what if someone is looking at wanting to start investing in real estate, what are sort of like some of the triggers in their own life for, you know, what I know you mentioned some things like maybe something changed or they're getting close to retirement, but like, do they have to have a certain amount of money in the bank or do they have to have a certain set of skills already in place? Or what would be an indication that maybe they should be looking at real estate at this point in their life?
I think if you're looking at, you know, your financial plan, if you're happy with where you are financially, then I'm not going to even try to interrupt, right? But if you're not getting to the place that you think you want to be in the time that you want to be there, real estate is really the final frontier where the average person has a legitimate shot at creating real wealth. And it just, it works in so many different ways. And, you know, if we look at traditional planning for the future, you know, the financial planner might really promote the idea of compound interest.
Yeah.
Right. The eighth wonder of the world. And you just let it go there and, you know, spike up at the end and it'll be amazing. But there's a few things that are really wrong with that. The primary one though, is most people just don't make enough to save enough for the magic to really ever happen. The second part is they typically don't start early enough to ever make that happen. Did I say that already? Start early enough, long enough, and they don't make enough. And then the other thing would be when you invest in like a mutual fund or the traditional retirement vehicle, like you'll see like there's a 1% fee. And logically, you're sitting down across the desk from the financial planner, like, oh, it's 1%. The guy deserves 1% if they're going to manage my money and get me to my retirement goal. Like it doesn't seem like that big of a deal. But when you extrapolate that over time, just the way your interest compounds, so do those fees.
Yeah.
So does that 1%. And when you put them side by side, your compounding investments with no fees and your compounding investment with just that 1% fee, you're going to lose about 30 to 35% of your money by the end of retirement. Yeah. Is how much it adds up to. It's a huge number and it's a real eye opener for people. So rather than compounding interest, I recommend compounding assets. Income producing assets specifically. You know, the ultimate goal for somebody in retirement that the traditional way is just that we want to get this giant mountain of money in the bank somewhere so we can park it and it spits off a residual income that provides for us for the rest of our life.
Yeah.
And that's a 40-year plan for most people if they make it at all. Per the Department of Health and Human Services, 95% of the people don't. But if that residual income is the goal, then why not just pursue that first? And so by investing in income producing properties or any income producing asset, but there is something, a few things that are unique about real estate that make it faster, but you can get there in 10 times faster to that retirement goal. And then just let that, now that you've hit your retirement goal with that income coming in, now you let the income go create the mountain. The stream of money now creates the mountain rather than the mountain creating the stream. And that's a 10x difference. And so that's kind of what my, I don't know if it's a mission might be too strong of a word, but that is my predominant message about what we do here.
So my other question, because I know this, I've been asked this before, because we've had other real estate trainers on, we've helped build some real estate training companies in the past. The common, I don't know what you call it, like thing that people always ask is like, but I don't want to fix toilets and door locks.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm in retirement. Mm-hmm. And I know there's probably a great answer for that. How do you answer that objection to real estate as a...
Well, there's two ways to do it. And I hear that all the time, particularly in the comments below my YouTube videos. But well, yeah, but you got to deal with the tenants and blah, blah, blah. First of all, there's so many places I could go with this, but I'll just start rattling them off. First of all, I've owned up to 350 units over the last 18 years. And never once have I got a call at midnight to fix the toilet. Okay, so there's the first thing. And so I think that's just this myth out there. It might have happened once and now everyone talks about it. So there's that. But the other part is, all right, you don't want to take a few hours a month to manage tenants, but you'll commit 40 hours a week to having to be somewhere when you're being forced to be somewhere working for somebody else for the next 40 years. So yeah. That's a decision you get to make. So, and then if you get really good at managing property managers, which is what we teach here as well, then maybe that few hours a month is down to maybe 1 hour a month. So it's not passive income. Most people confuse passive income with uninvolved income, right? Mm-hmm. So you got to be involved a little bit, but I'd rather have a few tenant issues a month and have the rest of my month off than being committed to 40 hours a week somewhere and not have any time off.
Yeah. So it's learning to choose your time. Like, how am I going to spend my time? I'm going to spend my time working for a job to get a guaranteed paycheck, or am I going to choose to spend some of my time dealing with whatever the tenant issues are, or maybe it's dealing with your property management. So they're dealing with the tenant issues. Mm-hmm. It's a choice you're making.
Totally. It's a kind of a pick, choose your poison thing. Do you want to get punched in the gut once a month, or do you want to get irritated for the whole month?
Yeah.
Right. So it's kind of harsh. I've never said that before, but that was the metaphor that just came to me. Like, in maybe punching the gut once a quarter is maybe what it'd be.
Yeah. But then you get to choose what to do with the rest of your time. And also you've got cash flow producing assets that allow you to deal with that gut punch, right?
It's like, for sure. You got the cash flowing producing assets. You've got the wealth building up underneath. Because, I mean, buying real estate at this day and point that we're having this conversation has never been bad advice to buy real estate. And I don't care where you go back in time, pick the day. Because right now, today, that real estate would be worth more than it was then. Yeah. The only bad advice out there was when you were told to sell it.
Yeah.
So that wealth gets created for you. And when it comes to an income producing property, something that no other asset does for you is it buys itself. You put 20% down and then the property pays for the rest, right? The tenant gives you the money each month. You go ahead and you pay all the bills. You get to keep a little bit that's left over. You get to live on that. But it's buying your asset for you. So where can you put 20% down and get 100% of an asset? There's no other place for us, for people like us.
Yeah. So for those of us that are living in expensive markets like South Florida or Southern California, and we look at the price of homes and it's like, you know, to buy a postage stamp, it costs $1 million. Is that the case all across the market that you have to have, you know, $300,000-$400,000 just to cover the 20% down? Or are there other markets where you can actually get into real estate for, you know, I don't want to say reasonable sums, but for sums that would be more accessible to more people?
Sure. Yeah. The purchase price or the price of a property, it's relative. Mm-hmm. And just like the interest rates are relative. People think, oh, I can't buy now. The interest rates are so high. Well, you just need to make sure that you're making more money on the property to cover the interest rate than not, right? So, you know, if you go and bought a $1 million house in Florida somewhere, and that mortgage, I don't know, wasn't going to be 5,000, 6,000 bucks a month, maybe. So you'd have to make sure that property generates more than the 6,000 bucks. So it might not be a traditional rental. It could be an assisted living facility. It could be a short-term rental. It could be a midterm rental that would cover it. Then, or you can go to the Midwest where they've got houses for $125,000, $150,000 total, and they rent for $1,200, $1,300 a month. So it's just relative wherever you go. So that's the first part. Location does matter, but it doesn't mean it's a bad investment just because it's expensive. That's a real big myth. It just means you have to get it to produce more money is all. The other part would be, I lost my train of thought there. The other part would be the income, the price. I don't know, I'll get back to it. Yeah, it'll come back to me.
I was just talking for people who are looking to get into real estate. A lot of people will assume.
I remember that, but go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say they need to have a certain amount of money in the bank so they can cover that 20% down. That's just like, it's free money. Like it's, what do they call it? Discretionary income to put into something like an investment. And so if they're looking at their houses around Florida or California or some of the other expensive markets, they might be like, okay, it's a long ways off for me to be able to buy a property. Whereas maybe like, hey, you can actually look in other markets and maybe be able to get something today.
For sure. And that's really what we do over here with my wife's company, Cashflow Savvy, is that we're in 10 different markets in the United States. So we're all through the Midwest and the South where this is actually very accessible and doable. And, you know, half of our properties I've never even seen before in person. Most of our clients have never seen their properties in person. So you don't really need to be there to have it managed and have it perform. We've kind of figured that part out. But the other part of that was that I had a memory loss there for a second. The other part, you don't necessarily always need 20% down either. If to get into the game and take that first step, there's an FHA loan out there for 3.5% down. That's pretty much 10 grand in most parts of the country at a max. Now, there's a stipulation where you'd have to live in it for a second. But if you're just getting started and you're considering that a stepping stone, it's not your forever home, then that's a really easy way for everybody to get in. And, you know, they've got There's countless down payment grants. I mean, you can get in for zero down on those FHA loans. So if someone really wants to buy a house, they can.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to get into sort of the theme of our show here, which is your origin story, right? Every good comic book hero has an origin story. It's the thing that made you into the hero you are today. And we want to hear that story. You know, were you born a hero, or were you bit by a radioactive spider that made you want to get into real estate investing? Or did you start a job and eventually switch to becoming an entrepreneur? Basically, where did you come from that you ended up here doing real estate investing and training other people?
Mm-hmm. It's a weird thing because I come from a family of civil servants. There's a lot of police officers in my family, a lot of fire department people. My cousin just retired as the youngest chief in Santa Ana Fire Department. Aerospace engineers that work for the government. So I've got a lot of real civil servants, just very traditionally minded people in my family, not a single entrepreneur in the bunch. So I don't know where I got it, because I always had the paper route. I always had the lemonade stand. I was selling magazines door to door. I just wanted to work, and I wanted money because I wanted to buy things, right? And so that's where that started. And I noticed when I started working at places, my first job was washing golf carts at a golf course. And then I was a cook at a part-time dishwasher, part-time cook at a Chinese takeout restaurant. And then I changed light bulbs at Nordstrom. And then I was, you know, I did all these weird little jobs. And I just, like, when I was a terrible employee, because I would just look around and, like, I would look for the angle here. Like, where are they? How would I do this better? And that was just like a natural thing. And I just, like, I always went out and then, whatever job I had, it inspired me to start a business of my own that was similar or a competitor. And so it was just kind of, like I said, I don't know where it came from, but I eventually got into the music business. I really fell in love with music, and I was born and raised in the hip hop era, the birth of hip hop in the late 80s. And I became a music producer. I became a DJ, and I got a nice global distribution deal with a major label, with EMI. I did really, really well and made my millions before I was 30. And then thought life was set. And then this thing called the digital download came along, this little company called Napster. Do you remember this company?
I do. I remember actually downloading things from Napster before it was illegal.
Yes. Yes. So that's really what put us out of business. And it put us out of business really fast, because we had this small little independent hip hop label. And it didn't matter if it was independent hip hop or independent rock or independent dance music. That independent audience really embraced that digital download first. Like, they're the ones who sought it out. They were the ones who figured out how to get free music, and they didn't have to walk into the music stores anymore. So we were out of business before iTunes was even a formation.
Yeah.
And so that was at age 34. And so I wasn't prepared for anything. I had no college credentials, or I didn't know how to do anything else. So I had to go out there and see what the job world offered me, and it didn't offer a whole lot. You know, I went through car insurance, tried to sell cars, and then tried to sell insurance. I went to a bunch of multi-level marketing type companies and ended up bagging groceries at the age of 34, and was sat there for about 6 months just with the world's biggest pity party. And maybe this was where the atomic spider or the radioactive spider bit me, because it was the grocery store manager that had said to me, he was 34 also, and he had said something, because he'd been able to acquire a few properties along the way. And while he was working there, because he'd been there 18 years or so already at that time. He started when he was in high school. And he said, you know, Matt, if you want your money back, because that's what I really wanted, I really missed my money from the music business. He had said, you know, real estate, it's the final frontier where the average person has this legitimate shot at creating real wealth. I've said it a million times since, and I'll never forget it. And at the time, I didn't know if it was true or not, but I didn't know, I didn't have any other options, because I felt I had tried everything. And so that night I started Googling everything real estate, and found out that I had an aunt that lived a couple cities over who was the number one real estate agent and had been for 20 or some odd years. I hadn't seen her in 15 years. And so I was kind of shy, but I was filled with liquid courage that night, if you know what I mean. Yeah. And I fired off an email, and in the morning she answered, we had lunch. And then within 24 hours, I was in real estate agent school. So it started as a real estate agent. And I did that for about 3 or 4 years. And then just kind of realized, you know what, if real estate is where the money's at, I'm sitting on the wrong side of the desk. Because I had a couple clients that were investors. And I started to look at their profits versus my commissions. And I was like, I want that. And so I made a huge investment myself and became a real estate investor. And took on that whole education and trained myself and just worked my butt off. And within, I don't know if you've heard of this book. It's kind of a rare book. It's hard to find. This book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Have you heard of this book?
I have. Read that book. Okay. 9.
Highly recommend it. Everybody write that down if you haven't read it. But that taught me two amazing things, and that could have been like another pivotal moment, like it has been for so many entrepreneurs. One was just the concept of passive income. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I speak English. I can take the words passive and income, put them together and kind of figure out what it means. But at that moment in my life, I had no clue. And then actually to be taught this new definition of wealth, to where it's not how much money you have in the bank. It's how much money do you have in coming in monthly, so you don't have, that covers your bills, and how much of that do you have left over? Yeah. Like, so that's that residual income thing. And actually being taught from that book to pursue passive income as an intention, not just by chance, right? And so I did that. So it was all about increasing your passive income, decreasing your monthly expenses, and exit the rat race. That was the formula. And I did that in about 3.5 years. And I wasn't wealthy, but I didn't have to work. And having experienced a big bank account having to work and a small bank account and not having to work, I liked the not having to work part better. And, you know, I was, my wife had just gotten pregnant, and like nobody ever taught that to me. I learned this on my own. I think I was 40 at the time, 39 or 40 years old. And I was like, you know what? I wasn't blessed with a family that could have taught me this. I want to make sure that my son doesn't have that same experience. I want him to be blessed. I want him to have this knowledge, this information. He can do with it what he wants, but I want him to have that advantage. So I just started documenting everything, and I started a podcast, and I started a YouTube channel. And then that started to bring in clients, like people asking me for help and wanting to give me money. And it turned into this education coaching business totally organically. And so that's where we are today.
That's an incredible story. Like, and so you went from nothing to on top of the world to losing everything and having to start over and rebuild your life, which is, you know, an incredible sort of hero's arc in its own right. But having to reinvent yourself, especially in your 30s, right? That's, you know, you're halfway through the second quarter already, and you have to start.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm 55 years old right now, and I remember how old I felt at 34, which I just.
Yeah, it's a really inspiring story. And to know that, you know, it doesn't really matter where you're at in your life. Real estate is, like, as you said, it's something that you can get into anywhere that the average person can start. And there's a lot of, you know, we've had a lot of real estate investors on this podcast to talk about it. And I think it's a fascinating space to be in, because it's one of the few that you can leverage, you know, and to use Rich Dad Poor Dad's terms, opium, right? Other people's money.
Yeah, yeah.
To help leverage your growth. And that's where, like we mentioned just a few minutes ago, right? Using an FHA loan, or, you know, you put the 20% down, right? The other 80% is not your money. It's someone else's money buying the asset for you. And then the tenant is the one who's going to be paying for the asset over the course of time. You know, if you can do that once, you can do it 100 times. You can do 100 times, you can do, you went to 300 plus doors that you owned at a given
time. Mm-hmm. You know, if people just did that, they took like a new young couple in their early 20s, bought the house, their house together, and then in 2 years moved up and turned that previous house into a rental. And then 2 years stayed in that one for 2 years. The reason 2 years is because you can avoid all the taxes when you sell. And then every 2 years, you just did that for 5 or 6 years, you'd be set for life, that you'd be done. Like once you hit retirement, you'd be so much further along than if you'd gone the traditional route working for corporate America.
Yeah. Yeah. I look back at that and wish, you know, maybe I had done that, but I'll make sure my son does. And my dad does, right?
Well, it's not too late, Richard. You can still, here's another startling fact of what the sign of the times are right now. People are hemming and hawing about housing affordability. And how it's like we're at all-time highs right now. I think right now houses are as affordable as they're ever going to be. I don't think it's ever going to become easier. There's just too much demand. We have too many people than we have houses. I mean, in order for a bubble to burst, you have to have too many houses. We're in a decade's worth of building shortage of houses. And the immigration that's coming through is a whole new demand aspect that we weren't anticipating. And now you have corporate America, you have that demand coming through. So the demand is so huge and so massive that I don't think we'll ever be able to build them fast enough. People are going to have to seriously change the way that they live. And I think a single family house is going to have a tremendous amount of value within 10 years.
Yeah. And I know with the shift in the economy from, you know, COVID a few years ago, massive amounts of corporate America went from working at, you know, in big cities at big buildings to working from home, which has changed the demand for single family homes and changed where the demand for homes is all over the country. And as I said, it's not going to reverse anytime soon.
Yeah, no, I don't see. I mean, if it happens, I'll be right here, be happy to say, hey, I was wrong. But I just don't
Well, let's talk a little bit about your superpowers then, right? Every guy mm-hmm. hero has a superpower, whether that's a fancy flying suit made by the genius intellect, or maybe your ability to call down thunder from the sky. In the real world, heroes have what I call a zone of genius, which is either a skill or a set of skills that you were born with, or that you developed over the course of your career that really energize everything else that you do. And so the way I like to frame it for my guests is, if you look at all the skills that you developed over the course of your career, everything from in your DJ world to maybe working at the grocery store, all the way up to building your real estate career and then building a coaching company, what's that common thread that's sort of tying all of your skills together? And that common thread is probably where your superpower is. So with that framing, what do you think your superpower is?
There's a couple things. And the one that I would call out first is, I just have an awareness that no one's going to do it for me. So I don't sit around and wait for things to happen. I just go do things. Because it ain't going to happen any other way. And that's just something I've kind of, in hindsight, like, that wasn't an intention. That wasn't something I was always conscious of, but I would look in my rearview mirror. I see that constantly, that theme going through my life. If I were to say what my outside environment tells me all the time, it's two things. I have an amazing knack to solve problems, to take complicated things and reduce them to the simple, and to teach people how to do it, how to duplicate, how to repeat a process. One of our most common type of people that come here to learn how to invest in real estate are engineers. And I could have never predicted this. It wasn't an intention. But they tell me when they come to our office for our training sessions that they just like the way that I lay things out. And so, based off the podcast and based off the YouTube channel, apparently that's what I do. And that's totally subconscious, unknowingly. And I wouldn't even have known it unless I had that feedback. So I think that would be it, taking complicated things and breaking them down to simple form so they're easy to understand.
Yeah, I always called that putting the cookies on the lower shelf. Mm. They're up here, and if you put it on the lower shelf, then everyone else can get the cookies.
There you go. I like that. That's a good metaphor.
Yeah. I'm not sure why, but that just always popped into my head anytime someone talks about
it. You can't reach the cookies, right? We'll put them on the lower shelf then. I like it.
Put them on the lower shelf for you. And it's a unique superpower that everyone sort of needs in their lives, depending on what it is you're trying to learn, trying to get into. You need to have that person who knows how to take those concepts and put them in a place that you can understand them and act on them and then move forward. And it's one of the things that I think is fascinating about just the human species in general is, you always have the storytellers for that industry, right? For that skill or for that concept. And it's people like you that can make, you know, something like real estate accessible to people who aren't real estate investors. Or in my world, it's podcasting, right? We talk about how to put those cookies on the lower shelf for people who aren't podcasters, right? But they want to leverage that skill in their life. And yeah, it's a potent skill that I think everyone really needs to have in their lives, depending on what it is they're trying to pick up or learn or add to their lives.
For sure. Because we got problems all the time. I think it's Tony Robbins says, it's, you know, what determines your success is not going to be so much your resources, but your resourcefulness.
Yeah. What is it? The Who Not How book pops into mind whenever I think about that too. Is like, hey, there's someone somewhere who has the results that you want. And they can help you do that. They can help put the cookies on the lower shelf for you and help you get that same result.
Yep. And it's child's play to them. And it's difficult for you at the moment, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it reminds me of my wife does, she does 3D cake designs, you know, for my nephew once when, you know, he's always like 10 years ago, but she wanted a T-Rex. And like, she made a three-dimensional T-Rex with like fangs and like, you know, eating a raptor and like, you know, there's a volcano and all this stuff on there. And like, we have a picture of him. He like lost his mind when he saw the thing. And my wife is like, you know, I was like, why don't you do this professionally? And she's like, I couldn't charge for that. You know, it's too easy. And I'm like, listen, I was like, what you think is easy, everyone else thinks is a magical feat, right?
Yep.
They don't understand how you even did it, let alone, right? And so like, it's in those areas where you're like, no, this is easy to me. That's where you generally find your superpowers.
Mm-hmm. That's funny, because my wife, she gives me a big elbow in the gut all the time when I say, oh, don't worry, I'll take care of that for you. She's like, no, you can get paid for that.
Totally. Oh, man. So let's talk about the flip side, right? So if, you know, on one side, you have a superpower, which is that ability to help people solve problems and understand what's going on. The fatal flaw is, you know, just like every Superman has his kryptonite, or Wonder Woman can't remove her bracelets of victory without going mad, you probably had a flaw that's held you back in your business, something you struggled with. For me, it was things like perfectionism that kept me from actually shipping product, because I could always make it a little bit better before I put it into the marketplace. I just learned from that and realized, you know, you have to put it into the marketplace so you can get that feedback like you were talking about earlier. Or self-care. I had a really hard time with self-care as a young entrepreneur, where I didn't have good boundaries with my time. I didn't have good boundaries with my clients, let them walk all over me. And that really held me back, held back my income, held back a lot of things in my business. But I think more important than what the flaw is how have you worked to overcome it so you could continue to grow your business and to, you know, get into new markets like real estate training as well?
Yeah, this is like the second time this has come up here this month for me. And the last time was the first time that I ever really had to like look inside to see what that was. And the instinct was just the thing. First thing that came to mind was I care too much about people.
Yeah.
Right. And most people say it has a good thing and might be think that's a humble brag of some sort, but it's really like if I look in the rearview mirror, kind of maybe what you were just talking about with self-care, it's really been to the detriment though of my own well-being. Right. And that's a biggie. Like there's not a lot of time for me because it's always allocated to everybody else and helping them do what they want to do and what they want to get. And so, I mean, I look at people that say cut in line with no awareness or you care about anyone that's around them, you know, and I'm like, jerk, get to the end of the line. But then at the same time, I'm also kind of like, God, I wish I could do that. You know, I wish I could just cut in the line and not care about what anyone thought. I think that that's an extreme, but there is a line in there that I could certainly afford to go a little bit more in that direction with how I act. Yeah,
that's actually, I think it's a really important discussion. Maybe we can dive into a little bit because, you know, I struggled with that for a long time too. And this idea that like, oh, you know, I care too much. And I almost feel like that's the wrong framing. And it's just,
right, it sounds weird to say. Yeah.
Weird to say, because you're like, it's not that you care too much about people. It's that you're not caring enough about yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's that whole idea of like, you know, if you're going to help someone else put the oxygen mask on, you have to put yours on first. Like you have to take care of yourself. You have to take care of your health. You have to take care of your fitness. You have to take care of your family. Like your own house has to be in order before you can help someone else put their house in order. And yep. So if you don't have your stuff in place the way that it needs to be, you're not actually going to be able to serve the people that you want to serve the way that you want to serve them or at the level that you want to serve them. And so it's actually a detriment to them and a detriment to the people that you care about if you're not putting yourself and your family and your health and your fitness and your relationship with God and all that stuff ahead of the people that you're serving in your business or in your community.
For sure. And I've, you know, I think we all know that. Right? Logically, like you didn't say any nonsense just now. You didn't say anything that I disagree with. But when it comes to actual practical application and implementation in your own life, it's hard, right? You have to be like aware of it at all the time. It's something that you have to think about.
Yeah. And yeah. It was like one of the stories that pops into mind for me was, you know, I mentioned, you know, lack of self-care was with clients walking over me and with my time. And for the time was a big one for me because I thought earlier on as a younger entrepreneur that if I wanted to be more successful, I had to work more hours. Right. Like more hours was the lever that I knew how to pull. Right.
Yep.
And the realization that I had that it wasn't about the hours, it was about other things. And so I started putting restrictions on my business. Right. And it was like, you're allowed to have, instead of 6 days a week, 12 hours a day, you're allowed to have 6 days a week, 8 hours a day. And maybe, you know, 5 days a week, 12 hours a day, maybe it's 5 days a day, you know, eight hours a day. And I realized when I started putting restrictions on my business, on what it was allowed to have from me, that it changed the kind of things that I focused on in my business, on unlocking other people or on building systems to do, accomplish certain things. And what that really did is it opened me up to have more, a better handle on my own self-care, which meant, you know, being able to have the time to focus on my health or have the time to hang out with my kids or have the time to do the things that I want to do outside of business. But it also made my business grow because I built better systems and I empowered more people. And now, you know, I said, like, you know, we were at a mastermind a few weeks ago, right? And I mentioned, you know, I average like 4 hours a day, 4 days a week. And my business is 15 times the size it was when I was working 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. Mm. And so we're serving significantly more people at a much higher level because I did the work to make sure I was putting myself and my life and my family and getting my own house in order first.
Nice. You should create a course on that. I think there's a lot of people listening would be like, yeah, I could use that course.
I could use that course. I guess maybe I could. I don't know what I would say in it other than like, you know, put restrictions on what you allow yourself to do and then focus on these things instead. That was basically.
I was just listening to a podcast on the way over here before we started recording. And it was, what's it called? The Millionaire Something podcast or something like that. But he was interviewing a billionaire about what he's excited about for AI. And so they said, let's talk about AI, everything that doesn't involve ChatGPT. What are you most excited about? And he's talking about the AI agents. They're like, they're here and they're here to stay and they're better than humans. And so he started running down all these different applications of AI, of these AI agents, how they can just do everything for you. It's really remarkable. I mean, they think and they act and, you know, he's got a structure now to where he's built an AI agent who's actually the CEO of the business. The AI agent has its own crypto account so it can buy things and spend things, and it has transactions in place so it can actually make money. And he just kind of sent this AI agent out on Twitter. It's got its own Twitter account and it's making money for him. He says it's just a little bit right now, but I've got one little AI agent out there just going and making money. And it was just like, wow, that was like so different than, well, I didn't even think about that. Ah, so yeah, there you go as far as getting all your time back.
Yeah, I've been really fascinated about where the AI stuff is going as well. I wrote like 28,000 words over the weekend on this exact topic.
Did you write it or did AI write it?
I wrote a significant portion of it and then was leveraging AI to play with it and to turn it into more finalized pieces. I'm using it as an editor. Is that the right way to describe it? Yeah, I was using AI as an editor.
Yeah, a feedback loop.
It's a feedback loop. So I do a lot of transcripts where I'll talk into something and then okay, take all my ideas and let's turn this into, you know, a particular segment of a piece of writing. So anyways, leveraging it that way. But one of the things that I think is interesting, the whole AI agent thing, we're not that far away from being able to take all of the things that you've ever written or all the things that you've ever said on podcasts or all the other things, all your facial experiences and all that kind of stuff, and create an AI agent version of yourself that looks like you and sounds like you and talks like you and responds like you. And when I say not that far away, I mean like all of the technology exists right now for that to happen. It just hasn't been put together that way. And with that sort of on the forefront of like stuff that's going to be happening over the next couple of years, I mean, you have to really think like, where does our value come from as humans in this equation? And you know, that's where we started talking about like the value of mastery and the value of, you know, being the original, right? What does it mean to be the original, you know, of Matt? The creativity and the culture and the willingness to experience life or the ability to experience life is all going to come from you, right? It's never going to happen with AI agents because it's just not part of their DNA. Yeah. So anyways, it's a fascinating discussion. And
Totally. I think one thing that AI will never be able to replace, and maybe I'm wrong, but like taste, you know, like discretion, like, will it really be able to read a room and know what to say and what not to say type thing? You know, those types of things. I have a few editors for my YouTube channel and they do a fantastic job. As their technical skill and everything is far superior to mine. But, you know, and they might use a little B-roll clip and I'm like, that wasn't quite right. I would have used this one, right? Yeah. So I think AI like won't be able to have that, like those nuances, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think we'll be surprised by what it's capable of. But yeah, there's a whole future. And to the point of this discussion, realizing it's going to be more important than ever to have your own house in order if you have the ability to have, you know, robotics and AI tools that do a lot of your thinking and working for you. They're machines and they'll just do exactly what you tell them to do. And the output is not going to be, it's going to be determined by what the inputs you give it. I mean, if you have bad inputs, you're going to get bad outputs.
Yep. You know, when AI was first launched, was it almost 2 years ago now, I guess November. Yeah, we're on a 2-year anniversary, I think, right?
Yeah, just about.
And, you know, I started looking at it and playing with it a little bit. And I was like, oh, that's cute. Whatever. You know, I asked it, how do you make a martini? Well, big deal, right? It was like, okay, it's just another search engine for me. But then the more I got into it, the more I was like, oh, well, what if I asked a little different? Like, how do you make a martini with a Christmas theme, right? And then I was like, well, how do you make a martini if you are a world-class mixologist and you just got back from a world tour having swept all of the awards, right? And then how would you make that martini even better so it would make James Bond blush type thing, right? And so it started to really click for me. Another reference back to Tony Robbins, you know, he has this thing saying that like your brain is the most powerful computer in the world and it will answer whatever question you ask of it. Mm-hmm. And you know, logically, you're kind of, okay, that makes sense. But it is, there's a lot of intangible there, right? There's still a lot of intangible aspect to that logic. But now with AI, now it's tangible. So it's not really who has the answers anymore. It's who has the better questions. And, you know, so as you're saying, the input is what's so important. Like, you just have to ask it the right questions. And I'm just getting to a place now after 2 years of obsessive use of AI. Now it's like, it's everything. You have to remember, you can ask it anything, like anything. Like, usually they'd be like, okay, write me a viral YouTube script, right? Or write me an SEO blog post, like, or how to, you know, who's predicted to win the election? Just like all these basic questions that you might normally type into Google. But now it's like, okay, well, I'm struggling with this, and this is our relationship. And if I say this, this is what I'm expecting. If I say this, what am I expecting? What would be the best way to approach this problem? Like a personal issue. And like, you can ask it anything, and it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah. And you want to know something that's even more fun is when you start. So there's a lot of AI tools that'll let you do this, but I'm going to reference ChatGPT because that's the one that a lot of people are familiar with, and build bots inside of there. And a bot is just a large language model that has access to a knowledge base. And the knowledge base is essentially stuff that you put in it. So like, I've got one that has all of my writings in it, and I put all of my writings in it, and then we analyzed all those writings and put all the analysis of those writings in there. So for style guides and tone and the way that it, you know, the way that I think and the way that I write and the way that I structure sentences and like all these different things that are in there. And now when I talked about using it to help write, now I have this bot that when I give it questions or when I give it the inputs of like, hey, here's an hour and a half long discussion that, you know, I had about such and such a topic, let's write it in this writing style. You know, let's take these data points and then write it this way. And, mm-hmm. and now it writes like I do, which is mm-hmm. fascinating, right? It's fascinating to be able to do that. So it's like, it's all about the inputs. The better inputs you give it, the better outputs you get. And so like, that's a very specific writing example, but it's that same idea that like, hey, your inputs are going to be what matters the most, and which means that, you know, right back to the beginning of the discussion is your original thought and your culture and the things that you have that are unique to you and your perspectives are what's going to make the AI bots and the AI agents more successful, I think, going forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I want to talk then about your common enemy, right? Every superhero has an arch nemesis. It's the thing that they constantly have to fight against in their world. In the world of business, it takes a lot of forms, but I like to put it in the context of your clients, right? And it's in a mindset or a flaw that they come to you with that you have to fight to overcome so that you can actually get them the result that they came to you for. So in the world of real estate investing, either learning it or maybe doing it for them, what is that common enemy that you regularly have to fight against for in your world?
Well, personified would probably be Dave Ramsey, right? But the reason being is just like the no debt approach, like being debt free. And if you strive to be, if debt free is important to you, that that's your number one driver when it comes to your finances, you'll probably never be wealthy, right? I mean, you're going to have remarkable, you have to have write an amazing book or that goes, you know, sells millions and millions of copies, like the Harry Potter lady, something like that, J.K. Rowling's, or you have to have, you know, an amazing talent as an actor or a singer or as an athlete, something or some amazing business idea. If you don't have that and you're not blessed with that, then the ability to use debt and get your money to make more money, I think is really the only chance anyone has, unless they're already born with money, that they're going to make money. And so I place a significant emphasis and importance on making money in the world that we live in, because it's really important. There's nothing that serves us in the way that it serves us. Like, it puts the food in our stomach, the clothes on our back, the roof over our heads, it pays for the hospital bills, and it allows to do all of those things for the people that we love. Nothing in our society replaces money in which way it serves us. So if you're not striving to make as much as you possibly can to live the most fulfilling life that you can while you're here, then, you know, you're not going to be able to do that without leveraging other people's money.
Yeah. And it's a really fascinating conversation for people who aren't aware. Our economy, and when I say our economy, I mean the entire world at this point, is a fiat based economy, meaning that we have, you know, if you actually look at our dollar notes now, it actually says backed by the good faith and credit of the United States people, right? What that means is it's literally debt, right? Our money is debt. It is not, you know, cash is not some, you know, it used to be, you know, backed by gold and all these other things, but we have a debt-based economy, which means the only way to grow your wealth is by leveraging debt, by like growing debt. And so, you know, to your point, you know, there's two types of debt. There's good debt and there's bad debt. And Dave Ramsey talks about bad debt, but calls all debt. He makes that distinction, right?
Correct.
Between debt and bad debt. And so we have a lot of people that have this misunderstanding that there's two different types of debt. There's debt that puts money in your pocket and there's debt that takes money out of your pocket. And so for clarity's sake, I think what you're talking about is like, hey, if you want to leverage debt, you need to learn how to leverage good debt, the kind of debt that puts
money in your pocket. But to Dave Ramsey, it's all bad.
Yeah, it's all bad.
It's all bad. And yeah, that would be definitely the nemesis. And if you can't get past that idea, then you know what? It's going to be a life of mediocrity when it comes to finances. And if you're okay with that, then I'm okay with it. I'm not saying you have to be rich and you have to strive for more, but don't think by being debt-free, you're going to eventually also be financially free, because you won't be.
Yeah, all right, because it's the foundations of our system. The rules of our system say if you want to grow the money side of the equation, that you grow the money side of the equation with debt. That's how it works.
Yep. Here's a perfect example. If you take a look at all the, I just did this, I wrote a report, it was about a month ago, and I did the research. So this is relevant or current within 30 days. If you look at all the Fortune 500 companies in the 500, right, only two of them are debt-free. So there's a reason for that. There's a clue. Now, that's certainly on a big scale, but that's to your point, that's the economy that we live in. It's a debt-based economy, and debt is what makes the world go round, and they understand that. And so that's why they use that, even though they have plenty of money to go ahead and probably accomplish the exact same results, but they choose not to use it because there's a better return by using somebody else's money.
Yeah. I was just, you know, just having this discussion for our business, for, you know, the mastermind that you and I are both part of, I was looking at leveraging debt as a way to access that, you know, the tools and resources of that mastermind, and was talking to one of my coaches and taking that next step and growing up in business kind of thing. And realizing that he was like, you need to start looking at debt this way, that if you're going to say, make a $50,000 investment into your business, right? If you can borrow that debt, right? $50,000, let's do $100,000 just because the math is easier, right? You $100,000 investment in your business. And let's say it costs you, it's expensive, right? It costs you, you know, 16% or something like that. And, you know, just for simple math, it's 16% simple interest, right? $116,000. It's very expensive money to access that. But that $100,000 investment over the course of, say, you have to pay it back in 12 months, if you can take that $100,000 and use it to make $250,000, you would do that all day long, right? Mm-hmm. That's how you leverage money. You're leveraging someone else's money to do that, right? Because, you know, if you paid cash for it, now you don't have the $100,000 in your bank account, and all you saved was the $16,000.
Right.
It was like you spend the $16,000 on the debt, create the opportunities for an extra $150,000 in your business. And it's a very different way to look at money. And it's the same kind of thing that, like, what I've been looking at is I built my business on shoestring, meaning that we put, you know, put all of our own cash into it and built it from the revenues that the company produced, and realizing that, like, hey, I could save up for, you know, a $50,000 investment. And that might take me 2 years to do that, where we have enough free cash flow to put a $50,000 investment into something, or we could leverage debt, access that $50,000 now, and spend the next 2 years leveraging the wins that we got from that money now, right? Mm-hmm. And that will probably result in like millions of dollars in difference mm-hmm. in the company.
Yeah. I mean, back to Dave Ramsey, I mean, he just changed his tune on this a little bit within the last couple of years, but he was very much of the mindset that you should not buy a house until you can afford to pay cash for it. And I'm just like, we go back, like most people don't make enough to save enough for compound interest to work. How are they going to make enough to keep up with the appreciating real estate?
Yeah.
They'll never be able to afford a house. And you know what that's going to cost a person over their lifetime? It's going to be catastrophic to their finances. You know, the Federal Reserve released a report 3 years ago, 4 years ago, saying the average homeowner is 40 times wealthier than the average renter.
Wow.
40. Just by one house, not an investor or anything, just by owning a house. And it was like, by that statistic, and you have to wait until you can pay cash for that property, you'll never get there. So you're going to be that person that's 40 times in the negative.
That's crazy. Well, I think that makes a good transition to talk about, you know, your driving force, right? So if the flip side of your common enemy is your driving force, right? So just like Spider-Man mm-hmm. fights to save New York, or Batman fights to save Gotham, or Google fights to index and categorize all the world's information, what is it that you fight for with Epic Real Estate, your mission, so to speak?
Fight for... We can go back to our economy conversation, how we live in this debt-based society, and it's really inflation, an inflationary economy that we live in. And so you have this force that's constantly destroying the purchasing power of your money. And so you have to fight against that. And the nice thing, there's a saying that you might have heard of, don't fight the Fed. Have you heard of this expression before?
I have heard don't fight the Fed, but I don't know what it means.
Okay. It probably means a bunch of things, but this is one way how that works. Is that, you know, if I put $100,000 under my mattress right now, right? And then I lent out, let's see, if we go back to the beginning of COVID, this is the example. You have two people, two scenarios. One person, they got $100,000 and they're concerned about the future. So they put $100,000 under their mattress because they don't want anything to happen to it. A second person takes $100,000 and uses that as a 20% down payment on a $500,000 house. Right. So they both have $100,000. One put it under the mattress, one put it into a property. You know, you fast forward there 2 years to the end of COVID. And, you know, I think it was collectively that inflation was like 13%, 14%.
Yeah.
So that $100,000 that you put on your mattress, it's now only has the purchasing power of what, $86 or 80, yeah, 860,
yeah. 86,000.
$860,000, right? So you've lost, you know, 14, 13% of your money that you had in your mattress for playing it safe. But if you put it into real estate, so you put $100,000 down and you borrowed 400, right? The thing about inflation, forget the appreciation of the real estate because we know it boomed. That's not the point. But if you, the inflation is an equal opportunity money destroyer. So it destroyed the $100,000 on your mattress the same as it destroyed the bank's $400,000 that you borrowed. So inflation, now you take $100,000 times four, so say 15,000, make it easy. So it's $60,000 profit you made by borrowing somebody else's money just because of inflation, right? So my fight here at Epic is to show people how it's not just a real estate conversation, it's a money conversation, it's an economy conversation. And the formula, the perfect formula is to borrow a depreciating asset, money, to purchase an appreciating asset, real estate. That puts you on the right side of the Fed, on the right side of the system. And the system always wins. By playing the game of being debt-free puts you on the wrong side of the system, and that's why they lose. The Department of Health and Human Services just came out and said 95% of all today's 65-year-olds are not prepared to retire on their own resources. 95%, and that's the masses following the traditional conventional advice. But just by buying a couple pieces of income property, borrowing, using somebody else's money to purchase it, now you're on the right side of the system and you're doing just fine. You're in that 5% that made it.
Yeah, that's insane. And it's not even that difficult, right? Like my understanding, I haven't bought much real estate myself, but my understanding is the formula is not that difficult. Right? It's not like rocket science. It's not like going to surgeon school, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, my explanation there was very detailed and very complicated. That's what's happening underneath. You don't have to worry about any of that. Just go borrow money and buy an income property and done. Like you don't have to, like all the boxes have been checked, whether you remember what I said today or not.
Yeah,
absolutely. You're right. It's that simple.
Oh, I love that. Let's talk a little about some practical things here for our audience. I call this our hero's tool belt. Just like every superhero has, you know, their tool belt with awesome gadgets like their batarangs or their web slingers or their laser eyes. I'm going to talk about the top one or two tools you couldn't live without to do the type of investing that you do. Could be anything from your notepad to your calendar to some marketing tools, something you use for your actual like purchase of property, something you think is essential to getting your job done on a daily basis.
I would say probably the data that I have access to, because we purchase properties that are off market. We purchase properties that are in distress, and that's about 7% of all houses that are out there. So by having access to the data that kind of reveals which 7% of those properties are, it saves me from marketing to all 100, and I just have to market to the 7. That's a huge advantage. Wow. That's a huge tool I couldn't do without.
Is that the kind of thing that you guys leverage in your wife's business to be able to find property for your clients as well?
Yeah. Both. Because, I mean, if you went and just hired a real estate agent and went out and purchased real estate, you know, everything I've said is going to happen for you. Real estate will keep its promises to you. But if you know how to find them off market and say buy them with equity already in place, meaning buying them at a discount, you know, if I bought a house that was for a $300,000 house for $200,000, that's $100,000 I just made by being able to know how to find that property, yeah, rather than having to buy that house and wait for 5 years to appreciate $100,000.
So you're building like instant value into the property by knowing how to slice the market.
Yeah, you can really collapse timeframes that way. So that's one tool that certainly couldn't do without. Need a phone because it's a people business. And if you can't talk to people, then you're not going to do very well.
Here's a follow-up question on that. Mm-hmm. For, you know, because I run a podcast company, which means talking to people and doing interviews like this is a pretty much standard operating procedure for, you know, my life and my clients' lives. Is that a transferable skill set into real estate?
Which part? They're talking to people?
They're talking to people.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And that's actually a fear a lot of people have is they come into what we do and they think they're not people, right? I'm not a people person. I'm not good at small talk. I can't feed. I've never been good at sales and blah, blah, blah. You don't have to do any of that. You can be 100% yourself the way that we teach it. Because if the motivation is there with a seller, it's really difficult to say the wrong thing to the right person. It's if you have this idea that you need to go talk someone out of their house and trick them because you were so slick with your tongue and you had the perfect words to say, then yeah, no, that's I don't even think that's possible, but a lot of people think that's what it's going to be like. No, people are coming to you for help, right? And if you got a good heart and your morals and ethics are in the right place, you can be very successful in this business, regardless of how well you talk.
So let's talk a little bit more about that particularly, because one of the things that I don't think a lot of people understand is where the value is that the real estate investor is bringing to the market, mm-hmm. right? And so I've heard this said, you'll hear this said in like political things, where like, oh, investors are evil and that kind of stuff because they're preying on the market. And the reality is the furthest from the truth, right? That's not actually how a capitalist society works. You can't prey on the market and have a successful business. It's just not how capitalism works. So you have to have the value that you're providing to the market. So what I would love to know from you is, where do you see the value that you're providing both to the people you're buying property from and the value that you're providing to the people that you're providing property to?
Sure. Where that comes from is, I expressed that one statistic, 7% of all the properties that are sold under some sort of level of distress. It could be personal distress, financial distress, or the property itself is in distress. Mm-hmm. 93% are not. They're sold through traditional means through a real estate agent at full market value. And so you have these 93% that if any member of that 93% catches wind of what happened to this person at 7%, then all of a sudden they think something evil was happening there. Mm-hmm. Right. But what they don't realize is they're not putting themselves in their shoes. They're putting the distressed person in their shoes that's not distressed. So when people come to us, they're like, something bigger in life happened to them. That's something that's much more important than them trying to sell a house at full price and going through the traditional means of having to wait for a real estate agent, of having to deal with the marketing and deal with buyers and having to deal with the repairs and do all that stuff. I got bigger fish to fry. I need some cash right now. My house is going to be the financial instrument I got to turn to that's going to solve this bigger problem. And I don't want to wait for a real estate agent. I don't want to wait for all this junk. So those are the people that come to us. They've got a problem that's bigger than selling their house at full price. And people that 93%, they just can't imagine such a problem that would be so big that I would give my house away quickly at a discount. So that's the big distinction there. That's the value that we bring to the sellers. Because someone that's in foreclosure and they're going to lose their house at auction in 3 weeks, or they get nothing, right? That an agent couldn't act fast enough to save them, then that's the type of person that might come to us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? So that's how we provide the value to the sellers. And then to the buyers, obviously, you know, you get all the work done for you and it's a cash producing asset.
So how about for the people who might be renting from you? What's the value there?
Well, if they like shelter, I guess... If they want a roof over their head, right? If they find free housing somewhere that they're happy with, then go ahead and take it. But if they want a nice, clean place to live and, you know, in warmth in the winter, and they want AC in the summer, and they want running water and electricity, then I think that's kind of speaks for itself as regarding the value.
Yeah, absolutely. And then one of those things that, you know, we've talked about this a little bit before, but like the renting a place is a lot of times is either it just makes sense financially for where someone's at right now. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's a higher value. And I know we've been in that place a number of times. We're like, hey, we're only going to be here for 6 months or something like that. We're going to rent a place for this, or we're doing something for a job, or, you know, we're working on saving for something else over here. That like, there's a lot of times when renting is the more viable option. So there's value in the marketplace for the investors who are bringing in and providing the housing that way.
For sure. And there's a big distinction, Richard, between the house you live in and then the house you own as an investment. There's a huge distinction there because, you know, I'm 55. I just bought my first primary residence about 3 or 4 years ago. So I had rented everywhere I was at because it was cheaper to rent my home, but I still had all the benefits of real estate because I had a big investment portfolio. And so that made sense to me to never really buy my own home because I'd have to pay double for it to live there. But if I have income from my investments paying for the place that I live, and I get to pay half the price of where I live, and because of that, I get to live in a much nicer neighborhood, then yeah, that totally makes sense to rent in that scenario.
Yeah.
The only reason I bought now is because we got kicked out of our rental. The owner wanted to move back in, and this was right in the middle of COVID at the peak of the housing frenzy, and there was nothing for rent and there was barely anything for sale. So we just had to do something really, really quickly. So that's how we ended up there. So we just said, okay, let's buy a house that we can envision being a rental one day. And so that's how we ended up buying it.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of heroic tools, I want to take a few minutes to tell you about a tool we built.
that powers the Hero Show and is now this show's primary sponsor. Hey there, fellow podcaster. Having a weekly audio and video show on all the major online networks that builds your brand, creates fame, and drives sales for your business doesn't have to be hard. I know it feels that way because you've tried managing your show internally and realize how resource intensive it can be. You felt the pain of pouring 8 to 10 hours of work into just getting 1 hour of content published and promoted all over the place. You see the drain on your resources, but you do it anyways because you know how powerful it is. Heck, you've probably even tried some of those automated solutions and ended up with stuff that makes your brand look cheesy and cheap. That's not helping grow your business. Don't give up though. The struggle ends now. Introducing Push Button Podcasts, a done-for-you service that will help you get your show out every single week without you lifting a finger after you've pushed that stop record button. We handle everything else: uploading, editing, transcribing, writing, research, graphics, publication, and promotion, all done by real humans who know, understand, and care about your brand almost as much as you do. Empowered by our own proprietary technology, our team will let you get back to doing what you love while we handle the rest. Check us out at pushbuttonpodcast.com/hero for 10% off the lifetime of your service with us, and see the power of having an audio and video podcast growing and driving micro-celebrity status and business in your niche without you having to lift more than a finger to push that stop record button. Again, that's pushbuttonpodcast.com/hero. See you there.
And now, back to the Hero Show.
Well, I'm going to talk about one more thing here, and that's your guiding principles, right? One of the things that makes heroes heroic is that they live by a code. For instance, Batman never kills his enemies. He only ever puts him in Arkham Asylum. So as we wrap up the interview, I want to talk about the top one or two principles that you use regularly in your life. Maybe something that you wish you'd known when you first started out on your own hero's journey.
Mm-hmm. I think, and it's painful sometimes, but doing the right thing is always the right thing. I guess the word that comes to mind would be integrity. And I just said that and I kind of hesitated to even say it, because anytime I hear somebody say the word integrity or they're honest, I'm like, uh-oh. Gotta watch out for this person, because anyone that talks about how honest they are, but you know, integrity, you don't really have it. You're either in it or you're out of it. Mm-hmm. And I just find that life works better if you try to stay in it long more than you're out of it. And I just kind of define that as saying what you're going to do and then doing what you said for no other reason than you said you're going to do it.
Yeah. Right?
And I think that is that guiding principle. It seems like that's always the right thing to do. Life just works better when you do that. And
yeah.
Sometimes it's expensive. Sometimes it's expensive taking the high road. Sometimes you have to suffer a little bit by doing it, but you sleep better at night and you don't have any regrets in hindsight.
And sometimes you fuck it up and you have to apologize.
Mm-hmm. All the time.
Yeah. It's one of those things that I think people miss with this discussion of integrity, is that like integrity, like I love the way you put that, is sometimes you're in it, sometimes you're out of it, and you want to spend more time in it than out, right? Mm-hmm. But you're going to be out of integrity at some point, right? You're going to say you're going to be somewhere at some time and something's going to happen, you're not going to be there. And to get yourself back in integrity, that's where the apologies come in. Be like, you know what,
right.
I effed this up, and here's how, and here's how I'm going to make it better in the future.
Here's the integrity test, all right? Everyone can tell how much integrity they have, because people say, well, I have integrity. Well, let's see. So let's just imagine that you go home today to your spouse or your partner, and you say, honey, baby, you'll never have to take out the trash again, because I know how much you hate it, and I hate seeing the look on your face when you do it. Now, if it's not the trash, it's something else. So what's something that they don't like doing? You're going to go in and volunteer to do that for the rest of their life, for the rest of your life, so they never have to do it again. So, babe, you'll never have to take out the trash again. So what is their response going to be? Oh, baby, thank you. I love you so much. I knew there was a reason I married you. Or are they going to say, I'll believe it when I see it, right? And that response is going to give you a good indicator of what your integrity is like within that relationship. And that's a little eye-opener for a lot of people, because a lot of times it's going to be, I'll believe it when I see it. Yeah. Like, oops. I'm out of integrity more often than I'm in integrity, because this is how my partner sees me.
Yeah.
This is how I show up to this relationship. So it's a good test.
That's a really good test. I have a bit crazier stuff going on in my family, because we do a bunch of, you know, we do crazy things like travel full time and, you know, go out and start businesses and do things that other people find, you know, are risk averse to. And so I'm regularly coming up with new things. And my wife is always just like, she's like, we'll find a way. You always do. So
perfect. Perfectly said. Because I've got students that come in, and a lot of times it happens with Mercedes clients as well, where husband and wife will come in, and if they choose not to move forward, whether it's the husband going to take on a real estate investing because he wants to get his hands dirty and fix and flip houses, or, you know, the wife freaks out with Mercedes, it's because that it's somewhere. There's always typically a dreamer and someone that's a little bit more practical, a little more conservative. And it's typically because the dreamer somewhere in that relationship made a promise and didn't keep it. And for the other person, that they're put that role or that's playing over and over in their head, they're remembering it. And it might be totally in their subconscious. They're not aware of it. That's almost always where it is. So one way to restore integrity is just to make a promise and keep it and start a new track record.
And I really love the metaphor of you're in it or out of it, because like, it's really easy to just get in it. You just, mm-hmm. It starts with how you act now. Right. And that starts the new track, and then, you know, try and spend more of your time in it than out of it.
Yeah,
it's really good. I think that's a great place to wrap our interview. I always love wrapping on integrity, but I do every interview with a simple challenge I call the Heroes Challenge. We do this to help get access to stories we might not find on our own. So the question is simple. Do you have someone in your life or in your network that you think has a cool entrepreneurial story? Who are they? First names are fine. And why do you think they should come share their story with us here on the Hero Show? First person that comes to mind for you.
First person that comes to my mind, Rob Kosberg was one that came to mind. Do you know Rob?
I don't know Rob. What's the quick version of his story?
Rob, I think, is one of the very first people that had the company where he'll write your book for you.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And I think he was a real estate agent. Coincidentally, we didn't know each other then. And then lost everything in 2008 and reinvented himself from publishing people's books. And so he's got this whole program. He gets people to number one bestseller. And it's amazing. And he's a really, really good dude. So that's the first person that came to mind.
I would love to get an intro to him and see if we can get him to come on the show. If they sometimes they say yes. And when they do, sometimes we get really cool stories out of it. So appreciate that.
For sure.
So in comic books, there's always the crowd of people at the end who are, you know, cheering and clapping for their acts of heroism. So our analogous to that as we close on this show is, where can people find you if they want your help? Where can they light up the bat signal and say, hey, Matt, I would really like to start getting involved in real estate? But more importantly than where is, who are the types of people that should light up the bat signal, the people that should ask for your help?
Got it. Well, if you're listening to a podcast, you must like podcasts. So we have the Epic Real Estate Investing Podcast, and it's the longest running real estate podcast. We started in 2009. And so we're the first ones here, even when people didn't even know what a podcast was. We had to explain to people what it was. What's a podcast? And so that would be probably a great way. I've got a YouTube channel by the same name, Epic Real Estate, and we have a website by the same name, epicrealestate.com. So that would be how you'd find us. And so choose your as you wish. And then the people that I kind of explained in the beginning, that those that want to maybe supplement their retirement or speed up their retirement, and those would be the ideal people, or just dissatisfied with what they're doing for a living and want to be in total control of their finances. It's hard work. I'm not going to say it's easy. But you will be in control, and you'll be able to, you know, steer your own ship, so to speak. And if that's what you're looking to do, then you actually can go fill out a little questionnaire. It's reiace.com. And you answer a few questions, pick a time, we'll hop on the phone, we'll brainstorm some ideas and see if there's a fit here or not.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story today, Matt. Really appreciate it. And I'd love to just hear your story and hear more about what you're doing with real estate. And I love your mission, and I love, you know, I love real estate in particular. And I was like, I have real estate is next on my list for my life. And I was very particular, like, hey, we're going to build a business that throws off cash flow so we can invest in real estate. We're almost to that second stage. So, nice. So I really enjoyed coming, just hearing your story today. Do you have any final words of wisdom for our audience before we hit this stop record button?
You know, Richard, I appreciate you for having me on. I'm very grateful for it. And I think what you do for a living is remarkable. And I think it's a business built for the future, because, you know, I think we're living in a time where your personal brand is just really, really important. We're seeing signs of it all over the place with celebrities and with non-celebrities, and creating brands and just opening up massive doors. And I think what you do for people is extremely valuable. So thank you for doing what you do.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And if you are watching the podcast, make sure you go check out Epic Real Estate Podcast yourself and check out their YouTube channel. We'll make sure that the links for all that are in the description for this on wherever you're watching it. So you'll be able to find links to them. And Matt, thank you so much for being on here today.
Thanks, Richard.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of The Hero Show, where we work to shift the cultural narrative around entrepreneurship and celebrate the heropreneurs who make our world a better place. Don't forget to visit our website at theheroshow.tv, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or via RSS, so you'll never miss an episode. If you found value in our show, we'd truly appreciate a rating on iTunes. Or better yet, share it with a friend to help us spread the message of entrepreneurship as a force for good. Curious to learn more about the stories and insights of these incredible heropreneurs? Check out our in-depth interviews and resources on our website. Together, let's support and inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs as they embark on their own heroic journeys. Join us again next week for another episode of The Hero Show, where we'll continue to explore the world of heropreneurs, their superpowers, and the positive impact they bring to our lives. Until then, stay heroic.